You're listening to the Power Hitter of FM Radio. Keep it tuned to CKUT 90.3 FM.
I think the magnitude of this will probably not sink in or talked about or understood for a while.
CKUT.
Hello everyone, I am Vanessa Narducci, joined with Liam Gover for 90.3 FM CQUT John Abbott on the air, and today we will be discussing diets related to stomach and immune system problems.
Vanessa and I are both really curious when it comes to nutrition and specific diets, since we also have our own experiences related to health and food.
We especially find it fascinating since the both of us have tried many diets and developed habits for different reasons.
Before we get into our own stories and opinions, I want to give you guys listening a little insight on what it's like to have a more sensitive immune system. Since I don't really know much about underlying stomach issues, I was able to get an interesting story from a friend of mine, Chloe Chapdelaine, who was diagnosed with Crohn's disease. She is open to sharing how she bases what she eats around this problem and how it's affected her life. How long have you had Crohn's disease for?
I got diagnosed in 2019, so it's been like 2 years.
How has Crohn's affected your diet, and how has it affected your family's diet, if it has?
Well, having Crohn's disease, there's a lot of things that I can't have. For example, I cut out all dairy products and gluten, food with gluten in it, so it's come to the point where my family just a gluten-free and dairy-free diet, too.
Was it a major lifestyle change that has impacted you since you were diagnosed, or was it something that was pretty easy to handle once you were diagnosed?
I mean, I've always been pretty healthy when it comes to my diet, but I had to cut out a lot of things, so that was really hard at first, but I ended up just getting used to it. But I think it just depends specifically what. Definitely hard at the beginning, because obviously I wasn't used to it, and still now, even though I'm used to it, there's still some days that I wish I could eat certain things, or I miss eating certain things, or when I'm out with friends, like, I wish I could do the same things that they're doing.
Are you open to sharing one of your worst experiences that you remember with Crohn's disease?
Admitted to the hospital, and I was there for around 15 days, and that was really hard. I almost needed surgery.
Are there things you like about it?
I for sure don't like having, like, a chronic illness, obviously. I'd rather be, like, you know, like, normal, and not have to go through that. The only thing I like about it, or that, like, benefited me, is that it forced me to have a really, like, clean and healthy diet and stay away from, like, literally anything bad for your body. So it's helping me in the end, so, yeah.
Are there things you dislike about it?
Yeah, like everything. Sure, don't like it. Like, I'm never like not uncomfortable, especially because I do have uncontrolled symptoms. So when I'm out with friends, like, I'd rather like not be bloated and uncomfortable and in pain. But
all right, well, thank you, Chloe, for your time.
Thanks for having me.
So I really enjoyed interviewing Chloe because it gave me the chance to really talk to her about the condition in a more professional manner, rather than just talking to her about it as a friend. I really got to know what the technical terms and different things she had to go through in, like, I guess a more medical way, rather than just kind of being like a shoulder to cry on, or rather than just being there for moral support. I really got to understand how she deals with it on a day-to-day life, rather than just kind of like understanding without understanding, if that makes sense.
Yeah, after hearing your little segment with Chloe, it was kind of interesting for me to hear, because I don't know anybody personally with Crohn's disease, and I've never really heard about Crohn's disease. I've never learned about it. So from my point of view, it was pretty interesting getting informed about it and everything that she's had to go through. So
yeah, it was really interesting to sort of kind of hear things, not chronologically, but like kind of hear things in, like, I keep saying, a technical way, because, you know, I've always sort of, she's always kind of told me how she has to go through things like, as a friend, not really as, like, informing me medically. So it was really, like, wild to understand how, like, difficult it is to deal with this disease. Because, you know, she just has to go through so much and, like, change her day-to-day life in terms of, like, eating and health and stuff for this disease that she unfortunately has to go through.
Yeah, exactly. And it really makes us think, as, like, people that have somewhat normal diets, it kind of puts us in her shoes and what it would be like to have Crohn's disease and how it would feel and everything. So to back that up, we pulled up a clip off of YouTube for you guys to listen to. It's a small little segment about Crohn's disease that is very informative.
Crohn's disease, actually now more frequently referred to as Crohn disease, is an inflammatory bowel disease that, well, causes inflammation in the bowel. Unlike its cousin, ulcerative colitis, which only affects the large intestine, Crohn's disease causes inflammation and tissue destruction anywhere along the gastrointestinal tract, from the mouth to the anus. Although ulcerative colitis is classified and treated as an autoimmune disease, Crohn's disease isn't technically classified as an autoimmune disease, but rather an immune-related disorder.
Now that we've spoken about an issue like Crohn's, I thought it would be interesting if we could interview someone with a stomach issue such as IBS, another word for irritable bowel syndrome. Here, I am joined with a friend of mine, Anna Macia, who recently discovered she had this health issue.
So, Anna, at what point did you realize you had digestive and stomach issues?
I realized in the 10th grade when I was going under a lot of stress and it just flared up. I always had a sensitive stomach, but I realized in, like, my worst times that it was something more.
And you take medication, right?
I take medication every time it flares up, but I take probiotics every day.
And how does that help with the swelling?
Well, what I take is basically like muscle relaxers, so it relaxes the stomach so it doesn't like feel anything, or like it just like completely like stops the muscles from contracting and swelling.
And do you still get really bad cramps if you have certain foods despite the medicine you're taking?
Yeah, for sure.
Has it changed your diet at all? Like, what's your diet like?
Well, I eat cleaner, so I don't go like eat fried foods as much, and I don't eat as much meats because meats seem to be a trigger for me.
And how drastic did your diet change after you found out you had IBS? So did it change a lot?
Well, it made me more cautious, but it changed like slowly just because I didn't want to give up foods that I like.
And how long do your cramps last when you do get cramps?
They last like a few hours, basically till the whole digestive process is done, or like I sleep and with the pain, so I don't know, but it's like a few hours for sure.
And lastly, what are some bad trigger foods?
Well, anything fried, so like hamburgers, fries, dairy as well, so like ice cream and meat, so like steak or like minced meat or anything like that. Yeah.
So I've been close friends with Anna for over 5 years, so it was pretty interesting when she first came to me talking about this problem a couple years ago. And like you said with Chloe, it was interesting to hear it from a more statistical standpoint and a more medical point of view than just being there for her and not knowing really what it was. I think that this interview with Anna really helped me understand what she was going through and helped me understand the issues that she was having and connect with her more on a deeper level about what she was struggling with.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I find it interesting because, you know, I think everyone sort of takes food-related health topics kind of for granted because it's something we all just, like, I guess people who are deemed healthy, I guess, sort of take these things for granted because it's just, in your mind, it's sort of simple. But, like, in a case of someone who has Crohn's or IBS, like Chloe and Anna, they really have to change and alter their lifestyle to, you know, live with their conditions. I think it's really interesting and intriguing because, you know, we both didn't know we had these two friends that had these conditions until we started, like, we came up with the idea and concept for this project, and we both sort of told each other, like, hey, we both have friends who have this, and we were kind of like, oh, I do too, you know? So it's kind of interesting to see how many people actually have this and what the stats are.
So, Liam, based off of your personal experience, how has your diet affected and changed your life?
Well, I would say about 9-ish months ago, Yeah, 9 months ago, I decided to change my lifestyle because I just wasn't happy with how my lifestyle was in terms of food and what I was eating and dieting. I just wanted to be a bit healthier overall, and you know, which is great. I really like turned things around for myself. But with that, you know, sometimes I can open up a whole other door of like body image issues. And when you start, sometimes you have this picture of what you want to become, and then you sort of like reach that magical number on the scale. But in your mind, like, what you look like doesn't match the number, and so that can open up a whole door of, like, you know, possible eating disorders or other dangerous things that are, you know, included in body image and dieting. So I think that's really something to be aware of, because personally, it is something that I have struggled with and continue to struggle with. So it's just, you know, it's something you always have to keep yourself on top of and, you know, hype yourself up. You're doing the best that you can. And, you know, the like number one thing that I tell myself is that I'm doing this for me and I want to be healthy for me.
Yeah, exactly. I actually had a similar experience, except another added problem to that was that I developed a lactose intolerance, and I only figured this out a couple years ago. I was at a restaurant and I ordered a chocolate chip cookie with some vanilla ice cream, and I got home and I had the biggest reaction to it. I got super, super sick. I had major cramps, and I just didn't know what to do. And I was pretty young at the time, so I didn't really think it was a lactose intolerance, because as somebody that used to eat so much dairy, ice cream and cheese, it was like, oh, okay, maybe there was something in the cookie, or oh, maybe, you know, I just shouldn't order that again. And then as time went on, it progressed to me being super intolerant to anything that really had dairy, to the point where now I'm having pills before I take anything with dairy in it. And even if I take my pills and have dairy, I still feel super sick. So I try to avoid that, and it's affected me quite a bit. So, you know, we all go through our different issues with diet, but I think for the most part, it's pretty interesting to hear what most people's lifestyles are. All right, everyone, so that's all we have for you today. Once again, I am Vanessa Narducci, joined by Liam Gover, where we discussed and conducted interviews about diets and immune system problems right here on 90.3 FM CQUT John Abbott on the Air. Thank you for listening.
This is Aiden Wagland of John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM. Enjoy the special presentation.
In 2012, I created my YouTube channel and set out to make stop-motion animations with Lego. I made some great friends, and for about 5 years, I made a bunch of videos. But unfortunately, a lot of bad stuff happened, and I just stopped and gave up. So what went wrong? Well, there was the Lego community, and unfortunately, it was very toxic. And because of that, it made me depressed, and well, bad things happen. Today we're going to look at that.
Before we get to the LEGO community though, we have to start from the very beginning. The year was 2008. YouTube was still pretty new and had only been around for about 3 years. I was in grade 3 at this time. At this age, LEGO was everything for me. It was the biggest thing. You had all the sets, yeah, everything. And 2008 was also a great year for film too. I was very passionate about film. You had Star Wars The Clone Wars, Iron Man, and The Incredible Hulk, and The Dark Knight all coming out in the same year, which were some of my favorite movies that year. With all the LEGO going on, I soon discovered stop motion animation. This was a new medium. Well, it wasn't really new, but like it wasn't as big on YouTube. It was mainly on other sites that I found it on, which is where I found the Internet Archive. The first video I ever saw was by the Lieberman brothers. That video was called The Amazing Adventures of the Temp. It had such a huge impact on me, and I soon started creating my own animations, and that is when I created my very first YouTube channel, BricksterMan00, on August 2nd, 2011. I had some of the most fun on that channel, and I made videos with some of my friends from elementary school. We created some great stuff, such as Lego Zombies the Movie, Lego Adventures Samurai Island, and Lego Star Wars The Revenge of Boba Fett. Unfortunately, things didn't work out. My mom was very uncomfortable with me showing my face on YouTube. At this time, I opened up a new YouTube channel called Splosh Production with my friend Matt. And yeah, we showed our faces. I had sunglasses on, but even then, my mom still wasn't okay with that, which is pretty funny. But anyways, through that, my mom had the last straw, and she said, no more YouTube, because she wasn't comfortable with me being on there. So I deleted my YouTube channels, both of them, Splosh Production and Bricksterman00. Really killed me to do that, but it wasn't the end. Literally a few months later, I opened up a new channel called iBrick Network, which later became IBN Studios, without my parents' knowledge. And then I just went from there. Eventually, they did find out, and they were okay with it. And it's through there that we really got to the LEGO community.
So back in the day, I used to run a little YouTube channel, and I'm not even saying that like sarcastically, like I used to run this little YouTube channel. And brick filming is something that I primarily used the channel for, especially in its later years, but we did other things too. It wasn't all brick filming, but when I did do brick filming, I mean, it's something that I always loved to do. I haven't really gotten to do it so much since, but it was always really fun simply because of the fact that you didn't need any sort of big budget to make something look really, really cool, right? I mean, it's all just miniature. It's all Lego. It's all at your disposal. And you can make these really, really epic scenes and epic movies for very little. And, you know, in your bedroom, and just get some friends to voice act and such. So I always really liked that element of it. I'm still really fascinated by that whole kind of world and community and everything. So yeah, I mean, it's always been a pleasure to be brick filming, bruh.
Hello everyone, my name is Jack, formerly known as Jack Marmar. Lego community, wow, some pretty heavy shit, man. We started around 2014, I want to say. That was like when it really, really started taking off in size. Like, new guys were popping up all over the place, and you're going, oh, you meet everybody would meet each other. It was just like really, like, everybody was good friends, and everybody like talked to each other. Like we would meet on live streams. It was so much fun. It was great. And then it started getting worse once the bully angle kind of came in. I don't really like the term bully because, you know, some people just can't take a joke, and other people it's like, oh, it's definitely intentional. And with these guys, I think it was definitely intentional. Kind of was. I felt left out. I definitely felt left out. I feel left out a lot. And in this,
there's always a bunch of drama no matter what you look at. Like, any online community has some sort of drama. But I think for the most part, the LEGO community is pretty wholesome and people support each other. Anyone who's an asshole, like anyone that I know that was terrible from the community, has eventually been forgotten or not sustained their platform, because at the end of the day, most of the people are good people. And yeah, I think the LEGO community is still a great thing. Maybe it's getting a little bit less great just because like kids these days are getting really rude and they're just different, but overall I think it does more good than bad.
I joined the brick film community when I was around 13. There's many people, there's mostly teens around my age, still in high school, but also young ones too, because hey, it's LEGO. And for the most part, I wish I could go back to those days, because I had so much fun making animations, but like, there were times where, in that community, like, I just saw people who were just honestly too critical of others, or just, you know, too immature, where it morphed into bullying and drama between, you know, everyone. And there were days where I saw it and I just felt bad for the people who were getting picked on, or even just, you know, the people who were fighting, because, you know, we're all here to create animations at the end of the day, trying to learn and just trying to have fun, you know, making this stuff. And when other people start making it bad for you, it's dangerous, because it's turning your passion into something you don't look forward to. But the important thing to consider is that it's not all doom and gloom, because despite all this, we as people, we're all just growing up. We're all maturing.
I think for me, one of the most important things to consider when making this documentary was to get other people's point of views, which is why I wanted them to go first. My experience in the brick film and LEGO community definitely was not the best. It really made me want to, like, I don't know, distance myself completely from Lego. And it did. I lost my passion for film, among other things, for a while. Only now I'm starting to get back into it, like Jack, and now I'm slowly finding my happy place again. I think something that's really important to consider from now on is that social media, it's not safe for kids under 16. You don't really know what you're doing. You say things you'll regret later in life, and some stuff could even come back to haunt you. I certainly wasn't ready for YouTube when I started at 11. I wasn't mature enough, and I couldn't handle any of the criticism or the bullying. Really, that's it. I think just maturity has something to do with it. But through all this, I've come back feeling even stronger. And I'm ready to return and make some new content again. And I'm excited to bring you guys Lego Ricochet Rod, which will be my first stop-motion animated film in years. So look out for that.
The presentation that you just listened to was my news documentary, The Fall of the Lego Community. I'm Aiden Waglin, and I'm on John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM. This documentary was made to raise some very topical issues about cyberbullying and why social media may not be that good for kids under the age of 16. So I wanted to raise some issues that I experienced when I was part of this community on YouTube, and I also got the point of view of other people that I knew from that time as well, because I think it's interesting to see not just the negative experience that I had and maybe some positive aspects other people had. So I hope you enjoyed this documentary, and don't forget to tune in to John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Hey guys, this is Shane Osborne speaking on the impact of COVID-19 on musicians and the music industry on CKUT 90.3 FM, John Abbott on the Air. Due to COVID-19 this past year, everyone has been affected by it in different ways. Friends can't see their friends, family can't see their cousins, etc. COVID-19 has deeply affected our society, not only if you get sick, but in the process of preventing the sickness as well. For example, employees of a normal 9-to-5 have gotten used to working at home, or 4 days a week instead of 5. However, in the case of musicians, which is going to be the main topic of this interview, it forced them to not only find an alternative source of money, but rethink their career. Many DJs during these harsh COVID-19 times have been losing not only their main source of income, but their relevance, which is a huge thing for musicians. However, not all things bad have come from COVID. For example, it gave musicians a lot more time to work on music and perfect their craft. I, myself, make electronic dance music, and since the start of COVID, my skill level has nearly tripled, which is a fantastic thing because COVID helped me push my goals even more in the sense of increasing my skill level in a short amount of time. However, due to COVID, I missed out on a bunch of important opportunities and shows that I could have played. Here today, I'm with one of my good friends and 97.7 featured artist, Matt Ware, from a band named Yesterdays. How are you doing? How's life going, Matt?
Hey, Shane. Thanks for having me. Obviously, like, life during COVID's a bit different. You know, we can no longer play shows. We can no longer get together very often. So that changes a lot. But it's not that bad. You know, I play golf. I can still play my drums in the basement. So life's still okay. You know, I'm fortunate to have what I have. Some people have it a lot worse, so can't complain too much about it.
How has COVID impacted your guys' music?
In terms of our music, I'd say it kind of put everything on pause, obviously. So we kind of took the time to sit back and see what we have, and it's really been good in a way, I guess, because we can really analyze what songs we have, what ideas we have, and take the time to put it together, because there's no rush for anything. You know, you don't have to have it ready for a show, you don't have the stress of a show weighing on your shoulders anymore, so it gives you the chance to look at the bigger picture, sort of. And we've been lucky enough to be able to practice every now and then, and when we do, we've actually been pretty efficient when we're doing it. Yeah, it's been kind of good, I guess, in a way. Surprisingly, it's not, I guess, what the answer that you'd be expecting, but it's been pretty good.
What's the biggest thing you guys miss pre-COVID?
The biggest thing that we miss from pre-COVID is obviously playing shows, because there's nothing like playing a show live. You know, the adrenaline, seeing all your friends come out, all the people that are there to see you play. So we obviously miss that. you know, we can still reach out to people. There's still a possibility of like a live stream show or filming a performance and putting it out online, but nothing will ever be the same as doing a concert in person. So that has to be the biggest thing that we miss for sure.
What are you still able to do musically during COVID?
So I can still, aside from playing shows and getting together with people often to practice, I can still pretty much do whatever I could do before musically. I'm able to practice more or less whenever I want, given I have the time. And even with the band, we're able to practice about once a week, which is still, I mean, it's not ideal, but it's enough to get by with stuff. So we're still able to do more or less what we could before, aside from just maybe seeing people in person. And actually every person in the band has a pretty good like home setup, so it hasn't hindered us too much in that sense. Yeah, it's not too bad.
How has your group reacted towards COVID, and were you guys forced to like change the ways you did things?
I mean, obviously, our first reaction is we were totally bummed out and confused, maybe worried about what was going to happen from that point out. You know, we didn't know how long things were going to last. We didn't know how long we weren't going to be able to play a show, and God, we didn't realize it would be over a year that we couldn't do anything. We kind of, I guess, took it with a grain of salt. We've taken our time since, like I've been saying, we practice when we can, we do what we can. I think we reacted pretty well overall. Kind of take it day by day, and yeah, we see what happens. So it hasn't been too bad.
Do you think being in lockdown during COVID would have benefited you guys at all?
I actually think that being in lockdown during COVID did benefit me musically, because it kind of gave me the time to practice and focus on fundamentals, as opposed to playing the same music over and over and over, trying to get it perfect for a show, you know. So kind of gave me the time to just focus on my rudiments, take my time with my practice, try learning different songs, doing different exercises, just repetition in order to become a better drummer overall. So I think being in lockdown, having all the shows and the practices with other people taken away, gave me time to kind of focus on myself and try to better myself as a drummer.
How has COVID affected your group financially? Is there less of an income now with shows getting postponed?
Financially, I think we're doing fine, actually. It's sad to say, but most of the income didn't really come from shows. We did make some money from shows, but it would only ever be a few $100, depending on the night, obviously. But we would always put that towards studio time for recording. But now, obviously, that income isn't there from shows, but we were lucky enough to all have part-time or full-time jobs throughout the winter and the summer. We just kind of saved that up, so we still have enough income to put towards studio time and creating new music. So we're doing okay financially, thankfully.
How many times are you and the guys from your band still able to work together on music?
When the pandemic first started, we kind of took a break. We didn't really know what was going on, you know. We didn't want to step out of the house, I guess, too much. So we didn't really practice for, I want to say, like a solid 2, maybe 3 months at the beginning of the COVID pandemic. But then in the summer, when cases kind of calmed down, we were able to practice, like I was saying before, like once a week. That's been really good for us, because it allows us to keep on going forward. That kind of continued throughout the year. Again, just after Christmas, we kind of stopped again because the caseloads were getting pretty high, and we started picking it back up again, I want to say, in like February. About once a week. And yeah, it's pretty much what we've managed to do so far. It's like Sundays are the only day that we can really practice together as a group, just given our schedules. So we try to make it work when we can, and it's usually ends up being about once a week, once every 2 weeks.
Lastly, when can we expect some new Yesterday music? I know we're all waiting.
I can't give you a date for new Yesterday's music, because I don't even know a date myself. What I can tell you is that we're always working on new stuff. We're always trying to be as efficient as possible without kind of sacrificing the strength of the music or rushing anything. So we have stuff going. We have stuff in the works, but I have no clue when it'll be done. But as soon as we can, we'll get it out there for sure.
All right. Well, thank you, Matt, for joining me today during these harsh times.
It's been nice talking. Thanks for having me.
After hearing Matt and his band's perspective on how COVID has affected their musical career and everyday lives, it sums up what I mentioned before our interview with them. COVID forced a lot of musicians to figure out other ways of income. In the case of Matt and for his bandmates, he stated that they all had part-time jobs during COVID, which definitely helped them out, but not everyone was as lucky as them. COVID's impact on full-time musicians forced them to all change their ways for better and for worse. Hopefully this radio documentary shines light on the topic and reaches some of the musicians going through this right now. This was Shane Osborne with guest Matt Ware from the band Yesterdays on CKUT 90.3 FM, John Abbott on the air.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. This is John Abbott on the air. I'm Evie Stockvis. See you next time.
Juste la gay et Jean-Robert et Mistoc là.
Ok. Oui.